be wrong not to start off and mention a few things in relation to that and gradually tie it into the topic that we're going to talk about. Like Rabbi Eichmann said, he spoke about this in his shiur in the beginning of Hilchos Tainis in the Rambam. So the Rambam says that when a tragedy comes upon the Jewish community, what they need to do is they need to go out, they need to scream, they need to cry, they need to daven, blow shofar. And this is to arouse ourselves, arouse the community, that it's because of the way that they're living and their behaviors that this came about. And then he goes on, he says something interesting. Aval im lo yizaku v'lo yariu, ela yomru davar zeme minaga olam, if they don't cry out, and they don't scream, and they don't blow these shofars, and they say this is just the way of the world, these things happen, and we feel angry towards the Arabs, and the problem is a political problem, and that's the reaction, and that's the perspective on it. Harezu derech achzarius. This is a cruel approach. This is a cruel way. It causes everybody to continue in their wrong ways. It's interesting, we would have expected the Rambam to say that this is kfira, or this is a lack of amunah, or this is a lack of realizing how Hashem is the one that runs the world. But he calls it cruel, he calls it mean. It's bad midos, this kind of approach. And the reason is because he continues, v'tosif atzara atzaras acheros. If we continue in our ways and nothing changes and nothing gets better, then the tragedies will keep on coming. Because we know and we believe that everything is in Hashem's control. Everything that happens are things that are sent by Hashem, when it happens, how it happens, to who it happens, in what way that it happens. And if our whole reaction is just a worldly, narrow reaction and not recognizing who's in control and in power of everything, then we're causing it to keep on happening. When Hashem wants to get our attention, so first, He'll have something shake up by the Goyim. And we'll all be moved by it. It'll be on the news. Everyone will talk about it. But if the Jews don't get stronger, so then Hashem comes closer. And then closer. And then He gets to, God forbid, some of His community. And closer, God forbid, than the community. And this is Hashem shaking harder, tapping and pushing until He can get our attention. So to ignore it and not take responsibility on ourselves to do something about it is a cruel approach. It's something that we need to do. I saw that. I remember a few years ago, Yehuda Meidelis, he had a cousin, Grama. I forgot what his first name was, but there was a boy, Grama, from L.A., that he was driving his grandmother to the airport to go back home, and on his way back from the airport, he got into a car accident and he was killed. His father is a big tzaddik. He flew in. I went to the Levaya. And at the Levaya, he went to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. And I was there as he spoke to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. And there those that they want to ask Reb Chaim Kanievsky, but I thought the Gemara says, Shluchei mitzvah ein anizokim. People that are on their way or involved in a mitzvah, they're not going to get hurt. They're not going to be damaged. And he was on his way escorting his grandmother, taking care of her, watching her. And the Gemara says, both on your way and on your way back from doing a mitzvah, they're not going to get injured. So how could this have happened? And the truth is, Rav Chaim Kanievsky answered, and he answered the same way as he answered a question that he asked in this past week's parsha. Sari Imenu died when hearing about a Kedis Yitzchak. How was that an appropriate and correct way for Sari Imenu to die? When she's involved, he calls over here, involved in a mitzvah, it was an outcome of a Kedis Yitzchak that led her towards dying. How does that work with the rule of Shluchei Mitzvah Eini Nizokin? And the truth is, you could ask this also on a Gemara. There's a Gemara in Shabbos where Amar Rabbi Yossi, Yehei Chelki Mimete Bederach Mitzvah. Let my lot be amongst those that die while involved in a mitzvah. He wanted it to be that when one day he would die, he should die while he's involved in a mitzvah. That's a tremendous schus that he used to daven for, and they recorded in the Gemara as something that people should daven for. To die, when they do die, to die while doing a mitzvah. And over there, the Maharsha asks the same question, but I thought when you're doing a mitzvah, you don't get hurt, you don't get damaged. And the Maharsha answers, similar to what Reb Chaim Kanievsky says, What the Gemara was saying is that you're never going to die because of a mitzvah. Because of the mitzvah, because you're on the way out of the mitzvah, on the way back from the mitzvah. But if you're meant to die, then there's a special schus that Hashem will make it that you die while involved in a mitzvah. If somebody's meant to die anyway, Hashem would, as a schus, because of how he lived his life, or whatever led him towards having that merit, Hashem will have it that when his time comes, he dies while involved in a mitzvah. Those that were killed today not only had this schus of dying while involved in a mitzvah, but they also were dying on Kiddush Hashem, being killed because of the fact that they're Jewish. The truth is, at least one of the people that we know that were killed, Rav Moshe Twersky, I'm no one that could speak about him, both in terms of it's inappropriate that I should be the one speaking, and also I didn't have enough exposure to him. But I did hear him and see him a bunch of times. He's a Rebbe of a bunch of Torah Traga Tamidim, a handful of them that went to Torah, Moshe after Torah Traga. A lot of them went to his shir, or in his shir right now, the Torah Kriya today. And I was in the shir of his brother, of Meir Twersky in YU, as was a few of the Rabbanim here in Torah Traga. One thing that we could say about Moshe Twersky is that it wouldn't matter when he would die, he would always die while involved in a mitzvah. Because there was never a time that he wasn't. You've never seen anyone in your life as focused and as intensely involved in, you see that he wants to do the will of Hashem upon him at every moment. You will never catch him just stop making a joke not for a purpose, or just relaxing or chilling out. Always completely focused and involved in, he's either learning, teaching, davening. It wasn't going to be any other way but that we'd have to have this question, how would he be killed while doing a mitzvah? Because he can't be killed in any other way. And also, someone that lived his life in that type of way, how appropriate and how much it makes sense that specifically when his whole body is wrapped in a talus and his head is covered with his tefillin, his arm wrapped in his tefillin, that he's completely, you see the achdus of Hashem all over him, and to die then at Kiddush Hashem, somebody that lived his life in that way, it makes it's fitting that it's fair for a story to end in that way. Not that, oh, you know, it would have been better if he lived more, fine, but if he's going to die and it was meant to happen then, you could see that it's a schus, somebody who lived his life completely enwrapped in Torah, you see it like that. And a person maybe could ask themselves, if God, everybody one day is going to die, nobody doesn't die, everybody dies eventually. Some people are killed and some people die naturally. Whenever it is that I die, what do I want to be in the middle of doing at the time that I die? What do I want to be in the middle of doing? There are people that you hear stories, they died while texting and driving at the same time, and they show you a clip of what the text was that must have been what they're in the middle of writing when they died. Hey, whatever, da da da. So, besides that they're wrong for texting and driving and endangering people and themselves, but it's probably a little bit of an embarrassment to have that scene, like, that's how your story ended. Or sometimes people are killed in these, you know, disco places, dancing, whatever, and then there have been some piguas, some attacks where people were killed in the middle of such a party. So it's a terrible tragedy, people dying in any scenario, but it's also embarrassing that you were caught right there as the end of your life, that everyone will always remember that that's how it ended. And the point that I'm trying to make is not, oh, let's always be involved in learning and mitzvos so that when we die, the chances are we'll be in the middle of doing a mitzvah. That's not the main thing I'm trying to say. The reason why a person wouldn't want to die while in the middle of a movie, or the reason why they wouldn't want to die in the middle of doing any of these things that we'll talk about, they wouldn't want to die in that situation, is because they don't want the story to end that way. It's a bad last page of a book. You wouldn't want that to be the thing that wraps it all together. When a person is dying, we try to die with the Shem Hashem in our mouth by saying Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, because the way in which you die and what you were involved in as you left, it's like a closing of a chapter, it's a closing of a book. What was this life about? And if we wouldn't want to die while in the middle of any of these things in this list, that means that we agree and we understand innately that these things aren't intrinsically meaningful or valuable or important or everlasting, and not what we necessarily want to be known by. Even if some of them aren't even sinful and they're not bad, but none of them are meaningful, important, or valuable in essence that you would want that to be your legacy. What everyone knows, he died while blank. In Parshas Mishpatim, it tells a story of an Eved Ivri. An Eved Ivri, one way that he'll become an Ivri, a typical way is that he stole, didn't have enough money to pay back, and now he's going to be working for 6 years. And then he's meant to go free. While he's there, working for his master, the master could give him a wife, and he can even have kids with that wife, and give him a shifcha kenayin, and they'll have kids. So the Torah gives the following scenario. If the master gives him a wife, and he gives it, and he has sons, and he has daughters. So the story goes, V'im amar yomar ha'eved. If the eved then says, when the 6 years are over, Ahathia dadoni, I love my master, I love it here, I'm actually really comfortable, I like my situation, and I'm in love with my wife, and the kids that I have, I don't want to leave. At ishti ve'panai lo'etze chafshi, I don't want to go free. So what do? We take him to the door, we pound a hole through his ear, and we say, okay, you could be an Eved, you'll be here now for the next 50 years, but we're not happy with you. And we want a constant reminder and an embarrassment on him that this is an unfortunate situation that you want. Chazal say, wait, as long as you're a slave for somebody else, you're less living under the mentality of being a servant of Hashem. You have another master also in your life. He didn't do anything wrong the first 6 years because he had to be there. When we saw that he connected to it, that he loved it, that he wanted to continue, he didn't want to leave it, they said, that's so sad. Not everything that you connect to are you right for connecting to. Not everything that you love are you right for loving. And not every time that you cry are you right that that's a reason to cry about. Bnei Yisrael cried when the Meraglim came to them and told them what awaits them when they get to Eretz Yisrael, dangers and calamities, and they thought Hashem wanted to punish them when they get there. And they started crying. And Hashem says, Atem bechitem bechiyat shachinam, akshav tifku bechina ledoros. You cried for no reason. You attached, you were sad, and you mourned over something you shouldn't have, and now I'm going to punish you. I'm going to give you a reason to cry. Just because you feel strongly about something doesn't make you right for feeling that way. I'm sure if we would see a clip and get to watch any of the Arab families when they, you know, when their terrorist children or husbands get killed, I'm sure they're all in mourning and they're crying and they're tearing out their hair and they're going crazy and they're very hurt. And somebody that wouldn't know the full story may even come to tears over seeing the pain of these Palestinians. Not every time that you're crying are you right about it. There's a midrash that says that when Hashem was punishing the Egyptians with the makos, so he sent them makas barad, hail. And one of the things that the hail did was it was knocking down the trees. And now there were fruits all over the place and very easily accessible. And the Egyptians were hungry and they started to rejoice. They were happy, wow, this is great. Now easy, you know, to collect fruits. We don't have to climb in the trees. It's right there waiting for us. And they were happy over this punishment. And Hashem said, idiots, I'm punishing you. So he sent the locusts that came and ate up all the fruits. And what did they say? Says the Midrash, yum, we eat locusts. And they started to eat the locusts and bake the locusts and fry locusts, and they started eating them. And it's a sad and pathetic situation when a person begins to enjoy what's meant to be a punishment. Then not only can you not get their attention, but the things that you mean to hurt them with, they actually fall in love with and they love. Imagine somebody would be in love with and have a relationship with a woman and find out that she's actually a Nazi, and she kills Jews, and she hates Jews, and she probably even wants to lure you in also. Immediately, in less than a second, she'll become disgusting to you, you won't want to be near her, and you'll hate her that fast. Once you realize that this was something that was coming to hurt you, and not something that was there to love you. I heard a story, one time a girl told me, I don't know if it's a famous story, or it was somebody that she knew, this girl had a snake in her house, And this girl's friend, or she read it somewhere, had a snake in her house that she raised and took care of for a while. Mitch, I told you this story. That she raised the snake in her house for a while, feeding it, her pet snake. She loved the snake. One day, she wakes up in the middle of the night, and somehow, I guess she left the cage open or something. The snake is lying next to her in bed, straight. Just flat, straight out, lying next to her in bed. She's a little freaked out, like, it's weird that my snake would do that. And he loves me so much, he wants to lie down next to me. The mother called the veterinarian, and the veterinarian said, everyone get out of the house, close the doors, and close the windows. The snake wants to eat your daughter, and before a snake eats something, it measures to see if it's going to fit in its stomach. So get out of the house. What do you think she felt towards the snake right then? All of this feeding it and letting the snake get bigger, she was just preparing it to eat her own self up. Here it was when she was loving it. And a terribly hurtful realization when you come to it at the end of the day after a few years of investing in this loved pet of hers. Galus, exile, is not what happened this morning. When people are killed in terrorist attacks, in the Holocaust, when people die from diseases, that's not the definition of galus. That's something that happens during galus. It's a symptom of galus. When somebody is sick and they have temperature, the temperature isn't the sickness. The temperature is a symptom that comes along with the fact that he is a bacteria, he is a virus inside of him right now. Now the body reacts in a bunch of ways. But galus in its essence is the fact that we and the world and the Jewish people are not living with an acknowledgement or an awareness of the creator of the world, and no one cares or gives enough appropriate attention to the will of God. We're interested and excited about everything else, and that is something that is on the bottom of our priority list. And that is a Chil Hashem, that's what galus is, and when Mashiach comes, that's what's going to change. If a person wants to know their values and their priorities, it's not something that you think, well, let me think what my values and my priorities are, and then you say them. When you fill out a questionnaire, what do you think is more important? That's not a reflection of what your true values and priorities really are. If you want to know where you're really holding, you have to look at what makes you happy. What do you get excited about? What do you look forward to? What are the things that make you disappointed? And when do you get sad? Where does your mind wander to and get obsessed over? And what does it not think about? That's where a person is truly holding, and that's where the way they're living their life really is at the moment. Not based on what they say their values are, but how they live out their values, how they express them. I remember one time my son was like, when he was like 1.5, he was opening a drawer that we didn't want him to open. And he kept on doing it, so we were new parents trying to figure out what to do. So I thought, okay, fine, maybe I'll scream at him really loud, that'll scare him, and then I'll have like a natural reaction not to want to open this drawer ever again. I did it, he cried, I felt horrible afterwards, and that night I was at my Rebbe's house, I asked him if I did the right thing. So he said, would you scream the same way if your son would one day turn the light on Shabbos? And you're trying to teach him about Shabbos. Or if a parent gets more upset when the kid spills on the rug as when they catch him, you know, breaking a certain halacha, so then even if they tell them that their values are blank, blank, and blank, but they show them that our real values are this, that not ruining the rug or not opening that drawer is on a higher place on my priority list than turning light on Shabbos. There's a Rambam that describes what it is that we're waiting for when Mashiach comes. And he starts off by saying that how it's going to come about, there's a lot of different midrashim and a lot of different ways to put them together. But one thing is for certain, he says, and that's the following. Lo nit'avu ha-chachamim v'ha-nevi'im limot ha-mashiach. The Chachamim and the Nevi'im who are yearning, looking forward to and prophesizing about the awesomeness and the greatness of the coming of the Mashiach, it wasn't in order that the Goyim shouldn't bother us, that people shouldn't get sick, shouldn't be hungry. The reason why they look forward to the Geula and what the Geula has to offer is Kedei Sheyihyu Pnuyim B'Torah V'Chachmasa, that we should have time and we shouldn't be bothered by the distractions that we have now during Galus, we should be able to focus on learning, keeping mitzvot, connecting to Hashem, and doing why and focusing on why man was created and put into this world. Because as long as we're in Galus, there's so many other things that distract us and bother us from the goals of why we're here, and it's hard to focus in on that. And what Galus offers is those things are lifted from us and taken away, all those distractions. What we have to ask ourselves, though, is, do I really want that? Am I really interested that all those distractions should be taken away so that I could learn and just do mitzvahs all day? Is that what I want? Is that going to be exciting for me? There's a Gemara that says that there's three things that come and you're not ready for them. Just come suddenly. One is Mashiach, one is a lost item, and one is a scorpion. None of them you're looking for, and they all just suddenly, you're not expecting, and they just happen. Suddenly, they catch you off guard. What are those three things doing in the same list? Mashiach, a lost item, and a scorpion? So if Yankele Galinsky, the big Gadol B'Torah who passed away a couple years ago, he said that the pshat is because when Mashiach comes, for some people, it'll be like founding an expensive, valuable, lost item. It'll be exciting. I wanted this. I was waiting for this. I was missing this. And for some people, it'll be like suddenly bumping into a scorpion and they just want to run away. They wish it would disappear. When we ask Hashem in Shemona Esrei, the majority of the brachos are dealing with asking for things that have to do with the coming of the Gerula. Yerushalayim Ircha, Tzemach David, Tekah B'Shofar, V'Malshinim, Hashiva Shofteinu. All these things that we're asking for, yeah? You want that really right now? When do you want it? After the Super Bowl or before the Super Bowl? Do you want those things to come? Because it won't be a Super Bowl once the Geula comes anymore. When we ask for in Shemona Esrei, Hashem, please have mercy. Right before Shema, Hashem, please have mercy on us and allow us to learn, to understand, to teach, to keep your Torah. Do we really want that to happen? When? This week? You want your help? Let's say Hashem says, yeah, I'll help you. When do you want it? Rav Meir Tversky, the brother of the one that was killed today, was in Torah Chaga a few years ago, and he gave a shmuz. And in the shmuz, he quoted a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos is discussing the word sheker and the word emet, and showing you an innate distinction that's between the two of them. And one of the differences that it shows you, the Gemara says, is why is it that every letter of the word sheker is on one foot, but emet, everything is on 2 feet or has a platform under it? And the Gemara says because kushta kai, kushta is emet, truth stands, shikra lo kai, but sheker doesn't stand. Sheker is not something that will last forever. It's something that's temporary. But emet, something that's true, it lasts forever. It's standing on 2 feet because it's forever. It's eternal. Nothing's going to ever make it go away. All the different ideologies in the world at some point were big. Everyone believed in it. Everyone held of it. Some of them were big, powerful nations that held of such ideologies. And a lot of them already passed by in the world. But the Torah and Bnei Yisrael, even though they might have been small in number and ridiculed and laughed at, it's still here anyway, even though it's still small. Because emet kai, the truth stands, but sheker is on 1 foot and eventually it's going to pass by. So if Tversky pointed out, it's not just that sheker is not going to last forever because eventually you'll see that it's a lie, and once you see that it's a lie, people won't say it anymore. It's more than that. It's in the letters, so it's part of the word. That means it's a definition of what sheker is. It's a definition of what emet is. By definition, anything that doesn't last, that's not forever, by definition, that is sheker. And by definition, anything that does last, and it's forever, and it's eternal, that's emet. That's what's real. Those things will always exist. Those are the things that we're going to take with us after we leave this world. And all the other things that we don't take with us, things that the enjoyment or the interest in it, after you have it, then it's over. Now you're on to maybe it again. But that you don't have anymore, those type of things by definition are sheker. When a person has money, especially when they have a lot of money, a smart, proper, appropriate, responsible thing to do is to make good investments. Put your money in places where it doesn't get lost, but it grows. At least it gets saved, and at best, it grows. But definitely, if somebody would take things that are expensive, valuable that they have, and throw them out on the street, or for sure in the garbage, so that would be a very bad investment. And nobody would take their money, and do those type of things with it. When a person lives and makes decisions and accomplishes things, we have to try to make sure that our accomplishments are good investments. They're in things that last, things that will take with us, that will always matter, be always valuable, be always meaningful, and not just for today or for this week or for this year, but it's something that no matter how and when you look at it, this will always be something that was of value. I made a quick list of things over here.
I'll read the list for those that are listening to the recording of the list that we wrote on the board. Video games, following sports, fantasy sports, social networking, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, WhatsApp, texting, movies, television series, body sculpting, pornography, hunting for girls, drinking, smoking, gambling.
I don't want to insult anybody by this list over here, because what I don't mean by this list is everything here is automatically by definition bad or a sin. Some of these things, if done for the right reasons and at the right time, it could be a healthy way of leisure. Some of these things are always bad and always a sin and never good. Some of these things you need to tweak it a little bit to make it good. But all of them, everyone would agree, aren't things that you keep with you forever. They're not the things that you would want written on your grave one day. You wouldn't want any of these things inscribed on your day, on your grave at the end of the day. He had big muscles. He was the best on his basketball team. Nobody would want that on their grave. None of these things. When somebody would speak at a levaya, if they would mention any of these things when giving a hesped, people would start to feel uncomfortable, like, that's all you have to say about him? That's a little bit uncomfortable, awkward. I'd rather you didn't say anything at all. Can't you think of anything important? Anything meaningful? Anything valuable? Anything real to say? Because those are things that are passing. They don't matter. Nobody thinks that they matter in the long term. And then what you need to also ask yourself is, I'm not even writing anything on the side of everlasting, things that last forever. You could fill that in, the things that you know last forever, that are forever meaningful. But which do you see that you're doing more often? If you look at a typical day, what do you see that you're more involved in? What percentage of your day is this? What percentage of your day is that? And when you're doing this, are you thinking about this? Or when you're doing this, are you being distracted and thinking about this? Which one is the thing that you daydream about that keeps on popping up into your head? Which one of these things do you look forward to and get excited about when you're on your way towards doing it? And which one of them do you need schmoozes to get you to do? Which one of these things would you want your kids more involved in? If you had to choose now, pick your kid one day, what do you want them to be more involved in? This list, or things like this. What do you want your wife to be more involved in now and then when you're married to her? Do you want your wife more involved in these things? Or do you want your wife more involved in these things? And these are questions that we can't run away from, because they're in front of us every single minute of the day making these decisions. And I want to point out a few things. One thing is that all these things, the decision between should I do this now or should I do this now? Should I stay in bed or should I go to Minyan? So it's hard when the decision is in front of you, then it's confusing. Afterwards, looking back, it's not hard anymore. If anybody would ask you, would you like it that you would have woken up this past morning, or are you happy with the fact that you stayed in bed? Everyone would agree, I wish I would have davened. I wish I would have come to Minyan. Or if you went to Minyan, do you wish you would have slept instead? Nobody would say, I wish I would have slept instead. If the last 20 minutes that happened already, if you would say, do you wish you were learning and trying to figure it out? Or are you happy with the fact that instead you were doing blank, 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 whatever you're doing during those last 20 minutes? Which one would you do you wish would have happened already? Everyone would agree with this side, and not this side. It's only before the decision, when this is in front of you, that we get confused and too often choose this over this. And one of the things that we have to keep at the forefront of our mind all day long is, as I'm choosing things, let me not think about what do I want to do right now, but what do I want will have happened after the fact. If anybody would hold a gun to your head and say, either give up all of these things for the rest of your life, or I'm going to kill you. All of these things. I think everybody here would not give up their life, and everybody would say, okay, I'll give them all up, I'd rather live. But if somebody would say, hold the gun to their head and say, give up all of Torah and mitzvot, or we'll kill you, we would give up our life for these things. So, things that we would give up our life for, and we're willing to die for, why don't we make ourselves live for them while we're here? Why don't we make our decisions based on the things that we would die for, and not based on things that we wouldn't die for? Aren't we being very silly? And the reason is because it's not that you're not sure if you believe in this, you don't believe in this, or whatever. It's because we're lazy, it's because we have a Yetzirah, we all have Yetzirahs, because we have a strong pull, because this is funner for us naturally, and it takes a long time to get the self-control to get ourselves to do the smart, responsible, appropriate investments of things that are everlasting, things that we would want for our children, things that we ourselves would want to be said over at our Levayas.